This is John Okumura. I'm a professor at the Department of Ethnic Studies at UH-Manoa. September 1928, Tuesday morning in Honolulu, Miles Fukunaga went to Punahou School in a rented cab and was able to take 10-year-old Gil Jameson, a Hale young boy, from the authorities there on the false story that Gil's mother had been injured in a traffic accident and wanted to see him. And he was, Fukunaga was posing as a hospital orderly and said that he would take Gil to see his mother, but he directed the cab driver to take them to Waikiki. And they got off in the grounds of the Royal Hawaiian Hotel, crossed Kalakaua Avenue, and went to the site of what is now the International Marketplace, crossed through there. This is the site where of a hotel, the Seaside Hotel, where Fukunaga had been employed until that summer, August. And he took Gil beyond Kuhio Avenue, which was kiawe trees at that time, extending to the Alawai Hotel, an area where he liked to spend his free time reading. And this is where he bludgeoned him to death with a metal chisel. And to be certain he was dead, then he strangled him. Little more than an hour after leaving with Gil from Punahou. So why did Gil Jameson then become his victim? Well, earlier in the year, in May of 1928, a rent collector came from the Hawaiian Trust Company, a company that Gil's father, Frederick, was a vice president. But the rent collector demanded $20 in overdue rent from the Fukunaga family, who were living in downtown Honolulu, very near the intersection of Britannia and Alapai streets. And Fukunaga overheard the conversation between the rent collector and his mother, who didn't really speak English. And this demand for payment left his mother in tears, and therefore he went to speak to the rent collector and was very upset because the rent collector threatened him with eviction. And he said, well, how can we pay? We don't have any money right now. And so he thought this was very unfair that they would do such a thing. But in fact, they did eventually pay for the rent, but they had to pay 2 months when they were able to do this. But the psychological analysis of Fukunaga by a UH professor at that time, Lockwood Myrick, maintained that it was a desire for revenge against the Hawaiian Trust Company that led Fukunaga to plot the kidnapping and murder of Gil Jameson. Even though Myrick argued that Fukunaga was not fully aware of this desire for revenge, but it was his primary motivation for killing Gil, and that's why he became the victim. Fukunaga, when he was captured, which occurred just 4 days later on Saturday, was immediately interrogated by the police, and the reasons he gave had to do with, one, he wanted to get money from the ransom to send his parents back to Japan because they had a very unhappy life, very impoverished life with 7 children, which is why Fukunaga had to go to work after completing the 8th grade. The other reason he gave was to die himself because he was very unhappy with his life. He had tried to commit suicide in early April of that year, 1928, and had failed, and therefore he thought that by killing someone, he would be convicted, and of course confessing, and he would be convicted and then executed, and this would bring to an end his very unhappy life. But this is what happened. He was very quickly put on trial, so the race to death title of my book refers to, one, he was raced to death, his execution, because he was Japanese. This is a period of the anti-Japanese movement in the 1920s. As a result of the strike, a lot of retaliatory actions taken against Japanese Americans. And Fukunaga killing a young Hale boy from a privileged family had crossed that boundary, racial boundary between Hales and non-Hales, but particularly Japanese, as the largest group in Hawaii, viewed as politically, economically, culturally threatening to continued Hale dominance in Hawaii. So, as opposed to being tried as an individual know, without regard to race. He was definitely convicted because he was Japanese American. The other meaning of race to death is the way in which he was rushed very quickly to his death sentence. You know? He committed the crime on a Tuesday, captured on Saturday, arraigned the following Monday. His attorneys are appointed on Tuesday. Trial begins with jury selection, Monday and Tuesday. The trial is on Wednesday and Thursday. His defense was 19 minutes by his court-appointed attorneys. So the jury returns with a guilty verdict Thursday afternoon, but Hawaii law stipulates that a sentence for a guilty verdict for first-degree murder cannot be given until 48 hours have passed. That would have been a Saturday. So his sentence did not occur until the following Monday, the death sentence. And this would have been less than 3 weeks after he had committed his crime on September 18th. The following Monday would have been October 8th. But Hawaii law also mandated a 15-day waiting period between a death sentence and the actual execution. So that was scheduled for October 23rd, the first day it could be held. But in those 15 days, Fred Makino, the publisher of the Hawaii Hochi, hired Robert Murakami, one of two Nisei Japanese-American attorneys in Hawaii at that time, who agreed to take the case. And therefore, Murakami filed an appeal, and that started the process of these appeals that delayed Fukunaga's execution until November 19th, 1929. If not for that, yeah, he would have been executed.
Further unpacking that, what does it tell you about that time?
My concern is with the larger racial significance of the case, yeah? As opposed to it being a true crime story about a brutal murder in Hawaii in 1928 of a young Haole boy. So what does this case tell us about how race operated in Hawaii? And it did so in terms of maintaining this very significant dominant boundary between Haoles and non-Haoles. You know, and this is the reason why Fukunaga was executed, why Joka Hawaii was also lynched, because Haoles desired revenge in both of these cases. Both of these young men were seen as violating that dominant racial boundary, you know, threatening Haoles' supremacy. Although in the Fukunaga's case, you know, it's not as though Haoles thought that there would might be more young Japanese Nisei who would be killing young Haole boys or other Haoles in Hawaii. What the message they were sending to the Japanese American community is stay in your place, do not challenge the racial boundary by organizing strikes as they had done in 1920, or possibly joining Filipino strikes, future Filipino strikes, or just not challenging the laws that had been passed to restrict Japanese, as in the language schools case, settled not until, you know, just the year before, 1927. You know? So remain in your place as a subordinate group in Hawaii. Do not challenge Haole supremacy in the islands. That's the message behind the Fukunaga being rushed to death.
And then what is the backstory on his actual grave?
Oh, I've read it. Yeah. Well, it doesn't say Maus Fukunaga. It doesn't say Yutaka Fukunaga.
Yeah.
Because in Buddhist custom, and he wasn't a Buddhist. He, by the time of his death, he was a Catholic. But Buddhist custom, you get another honorific name upon death, which is the one that is on your gravestone. Okay? Now, Fukunaga, after the execution at Oahu Prison, his body was taken to mortuary on River Street, downtown Honolulu, you know, which is, you still can find those Japanese mortuaries down there. And then a service was held. Thousands of people came to pass by his body. You know, the family initially wanted a private service, but Fukunaga's conviction and execution had transformed him into a, one might, you know, even argue a martyr for the Japanese community. And that's why thousands of people still remembered him, yeah, more than a year after the trial, and they went past his coffin at the funeral home. Then the body was taken in a hearse, along with a procession of cars, up Beretania Street, which at that time wasn't one way. And eventually, I guess maybe they got into King Street, and they went up all the way to Kuhio Elementary School. Along the way, they're passing thousands of people, too, lined in the streets to watch this procession go by. And the grounds of Kuhio Elementary, there are also hundreds of people waiting, and also in the cemetery there, the Japanese cemetery, yeah? Because maybe these are people who did not attend the funeral service earlier. So another service was conducted there. Apparently, in the cemetery at that time, there was a kind of small shrine room or some kind of room for conducting these services. And then he was buried. His gravestone is very prominent. Yeah, it's the only one made out of natural stone. It's very high. Maybe 8 feet high on that 2 foot concrete base. Very likely not paid for by Fukunaga's family because they were so poor. Very likely paid by through contributions by the Japanese community, I believe, at that time. Okay. But it gives the dates of his birth and death. What someone told me, reading the kanji, the kind of translation might be, this is a Japanese speaker who's also fluent in English. She was a grad student here. She said, not necessarily literally, but the meaning is, this is the grave of a person who committed a bad deed. That's written there.
That's what it says.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another Japanese person who's familiar, you know, with the case, and I asked to interpret the kanji, and she interpreted in similar ways, was the natural stone used for his grave marker is what in Japan they used to use to indicate that the person buried there was a prominent person, as opposed to, you know, more polished marble. You know? When you use natural stone, at least during this period in Japan, that indicated the prominence of the deceased. And so, you know, again, this is kind of how the Japanese-American community viewed Fukunaga because of the injustice of his execution.